Welcome to the Journal of Special Operations Medicine. I'm your co-host, Alex Merkel.
And I'm Josh Randles. And this is where evidence-based medicine meets unconventional warfare.
The views and opinions you are about to hear are the speaker's own, and nothing contained herein is to be considered the official opinion of the Journal of Special Operations Medicine or the U.S. government, including the Defense Health Agency, Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Navy, or Air Force.
Hey, podcast listeners. This is Josh Randles, and I wanted to welcome you back to the second portion of the Dr. Ryan Maves interviews. In this portion of the interview, Dr. Maves goes into depth on the antibiotics in the CPG.
So in terms of giving folks resources to use, I love your idea of coming back to the CPG. So maybe as we wrap towards the end here, we could go through the wound care CPG selection of antibiotics. And then also, I seem to recall when you were teaching that austere medicine fundamentals of critical care course, you mentioned, I think, was it 5 antibiotics that you had picked for the PFC working group? Is that right?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to bring up my list, but I can tell you what kind of key drugs I think are most useful.
Yeah, so in looking at the Joint Trauma Service Clinical Practice Guidelines for Wound Management, what I've got pulled up here, and I'm sure all of our listeners are familiar with them, but maybe you could give us some insight into these 5 different agents and for wounds and also settings when you think one may be more appropriate to the other. And as you remember, the first one is Moxi or levofloxacin, and it says a note here of levo is preferred in the wet and jungle environment. The next one is clindamycin, the next is cefazolin, and then it ends with ertapenem. And so when would one choose one of those versus the other?
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, so we'll start with the fluoroquinolones. So that's levofloxacin and moxifloxacin. And like we talked about that earlier, these are relatively broad spectrum agents. In this setting, we're talking about oral levo and moxi. If you have a functioning gut, they should be taken orally. IV versions of these are really only for people who can't take something by mouth. So they're a little bit different. Moxifloxacin is a pretty good drug for intra-abdominal infections, and it's a pretty good pneumonia drug. So its spectrum of activity is, it's a very good drug for streptococci. It will accidentally cover some staphylococci, but I would never rely on it as a staph drug. It covers many of the common kind of gram-negative organisms in our gut, like E. coli or Klebsiella, and it's actually a pretty good anaerobic drug. So it's pretty good at covering things like Bacteroides and the anaerobic bacteria that are commonly in our gut. So with that, in a lot of guidelines, a lot of combat casualty guidelines, you know, there's a dichotomy between using ertapenem or moxifloxacin, say for penetrating chest trauma or penetrating abdominal trauma. So they overlap in some ways in that moxi is also a 24-hour once-a-day drug, just like ertapenem, and they cover a lot of the same stuff. The difference between them in spectrum is more one of drug resistance. That drug resistance to carbapenems is not that common, whereas drug resistance to quinolones like moxifloxacin and levofloxacin is actually relatively common. And that's, the challenge is it's actually more common often in low and middle income countries. So developing countries, so often places where special operations units might be operating, the genetic barrier to resistance in those drugs, how easy it is for a bacterium to acquire drug resistance is not that difficult. And I'll tell you a line I've heard before and I think is kind of quippy, is in the intensive care unit where quinolone resistance among hospital-acquired infections is basically, it's not 100%, but it's very, very high. This line that said, in the ICU, quinolones are basically a placebo that causes C. diff.
Yeah. You know, I heard you say that at the class, and I liked it so much that I have actually written it down in my list of quotes for future use because it's so great.
Well, and I can't take full credit for that. I plagiarized that line from a speaker at a critical care Congress meeting once, and I thought it was great too. So I've forgotten the name of the speaker, but I loved it and I plagiarized it too. So in the offhand chance that gentleman is listening, send me your name and I'll send you a royalty check.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, for mild intra-abdominal infections and for community-acquired pneumonia, moxi is a good drug. right? And it just, it is, in a healthy, immunocompetent person who's not in a hospital, who hasn't had a lot of recent antibiotic exposure. And there's good clinical studies saying that, you know, moxi, mild appendicitis, probably works. Like, it's probably an effective therapy. So, you know, so someone who can take PO with penetrating trauma, moxi, I think you can think of as an alternative to ertapenem. So levofloxacin is a close relative of moxifloxacin. It has a little more gram-negative coverage, and it doesn't have the anaerobic coverage. So they overlap a lot, but they have some differences at the ends of the spectrum. Levo is oral. It is also long-acting. It has a 24-hour duration of dosing. I'll tell you that, just anecdotally, my usual use of that in combat trauma is mainly for penetrating ocular trauma. Moxi and levo both get into the eye well, but anaerobes don't really play a role in ocular infections, and there are some concerning gram negatives that levo covers that moxi doesn't in penetrating eye trauma. So levofloxacin is probably my main use of that in a deployed setting, would be for penetrating ocular trauma, and I think that reflects the guidelines as well. Could you use moxi if you didn't have levo? Sure, but levo would be plan A. It's also a perfectly good pneumonia drug. I wouldn't use levofloxacin alone for penetrating abdominal trauma, just because it doesn't have any of that anaerobic coverage that you would want in case there was a bowel injury. So levo by itself for the gut is not plan A. Moxi is acceptable because it does have some anaerobic coverage. So that's kind of how I divide those two out. There's another fluoroquinolone widespread use, Cipro. I don't think Cipro has a ton of uses in any of these settings, although it may turn out to be a good specific drug for certain particular infections. But I don't use a ton of empiric Cipro in my practice in general. So, quinolones.
Yeah, and then I think the next one in the wound care CPG would be our old favorite clindamycin, which is also best buds with C. diff as well.
Yeah, clinda. So I see a lot of people using clinda because of concerns for antibiotic allergy, specifically penicillin allergy. They see someone who's got a skin and soft tissue infection. They say, you know, I have a penicillin allergy, so I can't use the usual medications I would use for soft tissue infection, like dicloxacillin or cefalexin or something like that. And that's a whole separate talk. A large proportion of reported beta-lactam allergies, penicillin allergies, are in fact not allergies. And those patients can and should be given those drugs if they are the drugs of choice. That being said, clinda does have some important uses. So they are a good staph and strep drug, and they do cover some anaerobes, not gut anaerobes, but like oral anaerobes, kind of anaerobes above the diaphragm. And so that has some utility. I know our colleagues in otolaryngology and ENT will use it with some frequency for head and neck infections, for example. And it's a pretty good drug for that. You do see a lot of people trying to put on clinda or some other anaerobic drug as an adjunct for, quote, aspiration pneumonia. I don't think that's terribly helpful, to be honest with you. I think that clindamycin is not a particularly good pneumonia drug, and I wouldn't recommend it for that. I think the real handy use in a combat trauma setting for clinda is as an adjunct along with a beta-lactam, meaning that, so there's these what we'll kind of call malignant soft tissue infections, meaning things like toxic shock syndrome, things like necrotizing fasciitis. Both of these syndromes can be produced by staphylococci and by streptococci, in addition to some other bacteria, but staph and strep are going to be the majority of these. And so the deal is, with these types of infections, that you have a bacterial infection, usually gram-positive bacterial infection, that is producing, at least in the case of toxic shock, a lot of so-called superantigens that lead to this overwhelming inflammatory cascade and a shock syndrome as a result of this toxin production. Another thing that can happen with a very large staph or strep infection is this thing called the inoculum effect, which is basically the bacteria occupy all the available space available to them for growth inside the human host. And then they kind of run out of space. And so what they do is they don't reproduce as quickly anymore. They just reproduce at kind of a steady state to maintain their numbers. So for both of these, beta-lactams, that is penicillin-derived antibiotics, cefazolin is one such drug, they require bacteria to be actively replicating in order to have activity. So what this means is that if you have the kind of inoculum effect in play with a large inoculum infection with a whole bunch of bacteria there that are only reproducing enough to maintain their numbers, beta-lactams may be ineffective. And then for this other, these other kind of malignant skin and soft tissue infections, one of the things also is that you can kill the bacteria, but the bacteria are not so much the problem as it is the toxins produced by the bacteria that lead to a lot of the physiologic derangements that we see. And the idea with clindamycin is that clindamycin acts by blocking protein synthesis and thus toxin synthesis by bacteria. So by giving clindamycin in addition to that beta-lactam, you're not just killing the bacterium, but you're shutting off toxin production. And then these large inoculum infections, clinda won't really kill the bacteria much, but it'll kind of contract their population a little bit. And when you contract the population, the bacteria can sense that now there's room to reproduce. They click back into active reproduction phase, and then the beta-lactam, cefazolin, ertapenem, what have you, then can effectively kill it. So clinda has this sort of neat adjunctive effect for serious soft tissue infections, and I think that that is one of the great uses of it.
Oh my goodness, I had no idea my brain was going to hurt at the end of this.
You asked an ID fellowship director who teaches people about antibiotics for a living to talk about antibiotics, man. I'm sorry, dude.
Dig your own grave. And so the last two antibiotics on the wound care CPG are cefazolin and ertapenem, and it sounds like based on your previous guidance, am I correct in understanding from your thought process that a soft medic would intuit both of those IV formulations are generally for patient who can't tolerate PO, with the cefazolin being for most patients within doctrinal timelines for surgical care and ertapenem being beyond doctrinal timelines?
Yeah, I think that's very wise, right? You know, let's say you had someone who has a soft tissue infection, but they don't need to go to the operating room and they're going to be fine and you can wash it out and manage that wound appropriately without advanced interventional care. Then I think that I would give that person IV cefazolin for that infection, right? I don't know if clinda would be like my drug of choice, to be honest with you, but I think that clinda would probably be a reasonable choice if that happened to be what you were carrying with you. I usually would treat those with something, some oral beta-lactam, like dicloxacillin is the one that I tend to use, although it's a 4 times a day drug, so it's kind of a pain in the butt. Minocycline or trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, or Bactrim or Ceftra, as it's also known, are also reasonable choices for those sorts of infections. You know, someone, though, penetrating combat trauma, requiring medevac, doctrinal timeline cefazolin, if the gut's involved, you can add metronidazole, or if penetrating head trauma, add metronidazole. And then if you are not going to be within doctrinal timelines, then ertapenem would be what I would use. Again, that adds an element of complexity, and that assumes a degree of ability to predict the future that I don't personally have, but I think that you could probably feel out in the situation you're in. And I think that can help shape that decision-making process, that quick trip to the operating room and Ceph. Long trip to the operating room, Invans or ertapenem. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's definitely breaking it down to my former enlisted mindset. But I know most of the soft medics these days are a lot smarter than that.
Well, that but you know what? I mean, we can joke about it, but that's basically my mindset too, right? That I mean, it's gonna be a little time. It's gonna be a long time, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm attending this week in the intensive care unit here, and we all have kind of different modes of thinking depending on the circumstance. Like when everyone in the unit's kind of everything's kind of under control, then I can kind of do my ID doctor thing where I'm like really getting into the weeds, going through a very deliberate process of what am I going to do with this patient, what am I going to do with that patient. But when someone's crashing and burning, you have to make decisions quickly. And, you know, and me spending frickin' 45 minutes asking my patient about their cat's sexual history and where their grandma went on vacation is not likely to improve their care while they can't breathe and they have a blood pressure of 40 over squat. I mean, in those situations, we need to have rubrics, we need to have heuristics to help us make clinical decisions efficiently. I've met enough soft medics to have no illusions about which one of us is smarter, right? I mean, I happen to have this very like specific area of knowledge, but like that's it.
Yeah, I think you hit on the us folks in trauma surgery. We like to say that when you guys are up in the ICU doing your medicine-y things, saying so many words.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, right? But, you know, well, and I joke about it too. I'll tell my team, like, okay, like right now, this person is too sick. I am going to kind of be like reactive ICU doctor mode. Just like, I'm just going to be an ER doctor here. I'm just going to respond to acute physiology and intervene for life-threatening things. Once everything's kind of chilled out, then I'll start doing the mind meld and, you know, discovering deeper truths, but like I don't have, yeah. I only have so much time today. You know what I mean?
Investigate every single nephron that patient's got left, even if it's only two.
Exactly, exactly. Two. I mean, that's one in a spare, brother. It's one in a spare.
That's right.